Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 74 of Being Youthful. I am Kim Beegler. I'm the owner of Youthful Fiber Farm and Mill, and I am at home today because it's warm. And too warm to be sitting in the mill doing this, so it's the afternoon. Actually, I think it's the evening, and we're just going to enjoy the sounds that are out here, which could be anything. Welcome. If you are new, thank you so much for coming to join me, whether you're listening or watching. I'll be talking about wool, lots of wool things, yarn, wool things. Okay. So in this episode, I do want to share with you all an interview with Stephanie Wilkes. She wrote Raw Material, Working Wool in the West, and it's all about her travels, her journey, basically, becoming a sheep shearer, as well as she talks a fair amount about the wool industry, and she shares part of the story about Mendocino Wool and how they got up and running. And the interview with Sarah from Mendocino Wool was in episode 73. So if you missed that and you want to hear from some other mill owners, there you go. I have a few viewer questions to answer. And I should be wearing my Anker summer shirt right now, but last night I had 8 rows of ribbing to do on the sleeve, the second sleeve, and I did the 8 rows, and then I was like about to bind off and realized that I did not switch to a smaller size needle, which I had done on the first sleeve. So I ripped out those 8 rounds, and back at it I will go tonight. So next week I will be wearing that top, and I love it, and I'm very excited to wear it. I almost wore it today with just like the needles on, but I honestly, it's too warm. I just couldn't change. I'm wearing a sundress, as you see, and I couldn't bear to put anything else on. So anyway, we're gonna talk to Stephanie. I'll show you that next week. I have got some mill videos, I've got some wool to show you from inside the mill. And before I forget, I wanted to talk about this weekend. I am doing, well, the mill is open, so if anybody's in the area, the mill shop will be open Saturday from 11 to 3, so come on by. Sunday, I am doing a workshop for my patrons over on Patreon, and it will be on chain plying, and it will be recorded this time, and any tier in my Patreon gets access to it. So if you are interested in learning to chain ply, or you've been frustrated by it, or anything like that, go over to my Patreon page. There is a link in the show notes, and join my Patreon before Sunday so that you can get in on that. It will shift a little bit when I do workshops, but this time my Patreon people are kind of my guinea pigs for this. So I haven't done a live workshop like this before, so we're going to see how it goes. It'll be happening. So, and thank you to all of my patrons over on Patreon for helping to make this possible, for sure, and all the other stuff I put out there into the world. So thank you all of you for watching. Okay, so farm update. We are grass seed farmers, for those of you that are new, and grass seed, so the grass grows really tall, the seed grows at the tips of the grass, we cut the grass, we let it dry on the ground, and then the seed is harvested off. And one of the viewers asked about, they said that it was interesting to see, they assumed that the crop that we got, the grass seed, that you would cut the hay when it was green and you'd leave it to dry in the field. So they asked, how do you avoid the seed head shattering when they cut the drying plants? So this is the skill of farming. This is where the farmer makes the call on when is the right time to cut. So the way it works is the grass, and my husband and his dad can tell me otherwise, but I think I have the basic gist of it. So the grass grows, and it grows, for depending on the variety, it grows pretty tall. The seed grows up at the top, and you're waiting for the grass to turn so that you can cut the grass and not have those seeds go shattering everywhere. So it's this perfect timing. Ideally, you've picked the perfect timing where the grass has turned, so it's not green anymore, it's turned into a brown, but it's not so dry that the seeds just, now I believe some seeds just do shatter off. I mean, there's a certain amount of loss, and there's a certain amount of loss when they're combining, for sure, because if they didn't put any fresh seed down the next year, some of that seed would just regrow, right? That's the farming. The joy of farming is knowing when it's time to harvest the crop. And that's basically knowing the right time when the grass is turned, but you don't want to do it too late because you can miss that prime window and then you are going to have a higher loss in seed that you're not going to be able to pull off the ground. And there is a difference between hay and straw for sure. Lots of people may think it's the same thing. Hay is what we all feed our animals that actually still has nutrients in it. And the hay is cut when the grass is green. We couldn't make hay per se out of the way we farm because we're waiting for that grass to already turn. What we make is straw. The byproduct of grass seed is straw, which basically the nutrients are all gone, but it makes great bedding and all other things. So anyway, I won't go too much further into farming, but that's kind of some of the basics. It's happening now, and it's just that time. It is a lifestyle, and this is the intense part of the farming lifestyle. So we just hope for all to go smooth and things not break down too much and that. So there's the grass farm update. At the mill, I have been working at the mill, although the last few days I have not been able to work at the mill because it has been so hot, and on top of hot, so dry. The humidity level is below 20% outside. It's breezy. As you can tell, this is calm. It's been windy. And with low humidity means not great milling climate. It just gets too dry. The fibers will break. They'll static. Everything goes awry. And you can condition, but you have to get to the point where you want to condition, which is usually post-picking fiber before carding. And it's not a great time to be picking. So we're just kind of hanging out at the mill. But I did get a lot done, and I just keep washing and waiting for things to shift a little bit in the weather. But before that happened, I wanted to show you a few things that I've been working on. So Fiber Club, hopefully I'm not making too big of a racket here. Fiber Club this past month was North Country Cheviot. So I have a little ball of it here. North Country Cheviot I got from Oak Knoll Farm up in Washington. I've been trying to get this from her forever, but she's a distance, and so it took a while for us to be able to connect. So Cheviot, if you look like in the fleece and fiber book on this breed, it's an entire section. It's called the Cheviot family because there's so many variants in Cheviot. This particular, the North Country, Sarah, who is the shepherd, and I'll put a link to their farm in the show notes, they actually, it's very interesting, purchased a farm where they were already breeding North Country Cheviots. And they had been since, I believe, the 70s. And their Cheviots came from Scotland. And they were trying to stay true to the Cheviot breed from Scotland. And Sarah's continuing that. And from what I understand, what's happened is, like so many things, the Cheviot breed came over and then all sorts of different breeds got introduced into the Cheviot breed. So there's North Country, there's South Country, and they all are a bit different depending on if other breeds or what other breeds were bred into the Cheviot, because people are trying to breed for different things. So anyway, Sarah's is, they're trying to stay true to the Scottish North Country Cheviot. And they're very, she used the word chunky. They're very chunky. They don't have very long legs. They're a little lower. They're very beefy though. They're not necessarily small sheep. They're just lower. Very chunky is a great word for it. So this is what, it spins really, really lovely. This fiber, it did a smidge more pilling. But then I sat down and spun it, and oh my gosh, it just is pretty spectacular. So here is a chunk of some of the fiber, and I'm going to compare it in a minute to Jacob so you can see how different, but it's got a nice springiness to it. It doesn't really fall into any category Cheviot, much less North Country, but it leans more towards the downy breeds, which I love a good downy breed. The luster is, I'd say, kind of a medium kind of, it's more than a down breed, I would say, the average down breed. And by luster, I mean that shine that you see. It's very springy. And the microns tend to be 20s to 30s. So depending on how you spin it, can be next to skin soft, depending on your sensitivity. It's a really lovely breed. It spins up lovely. There is some in the online shop currently, just in a natural white. So, but you can always dye it. You can always dye it after you've spun it. So there is that. The other thing I've been working on is the person I buy Jacob wool from. We made our little wool buy. So here's some lovely Jacob roving. And you can see that I did this side by side. So this is two of the naturals. There's the lighter kind of grayish brown, and then there's the darker brown. So Jacob sheep are spotted sheep. If you haven't seen them before, they tend to have at least a set of horns. Many times they'll have two sets of horns. It's kind of a breed standard. They're a heritage breed. I've talked about them before, so you can always go back. I actually did a farm tour up at Wiley Joe Farms, I think maybe 2 years ago, and did a special YouTube on that. So you can always scroll back to find that. So I did this side by side. So there is roving like this, and it'll make a barber pole effect once it's spun up. There is also this natural light, and then there's this natural dark, all available in roving. And somebody actually had asked me, who asked? Somebody asked about the Jacob, and they just asked, do I have a usual way of managing the color with Jacob? Because they can have a kind of a light lavendery color gray. It's gray, but it's almost like got this little hint of purple to it. They have the dark, and they can have white too. So I have done it all over the place. It totally depends on what the flock gives me that year, which changes. So the first couple of years, she had a lot more white in there. So it was worthwhile for me to actually manually separate all the colors out. Ooh, who knows what just flew in my face. Nowadays, she's getting more of this light gray and this brown. So there is some white, and I kind of have separated it out. But so a lot of times I will just separate out now the two naturals and then do something like this. If I'm lucky, there'll be enough for me to do kind of a batch of white, but it totally depends on what the flock puts out, basically, which I can't determine. So that's how I manage it. I wanted to show you just really quickly a flock. So here is some Jacob. And I just kind of wanted to have them side by side. And if you are listening and you can't watch, if I put them side by side, well, the Jacob is noticeably a bit longer. I'd say at least an inch longer. And both of them have some elasticity to them there. It's wool, so they should. The big thing you can notice is how different the tips are. The North Country is much more blocky and flat, so their fleece is going to be kind of... Whereas the Jacob has the locks are a lot more pointy. And so you can kind of see it all kind of comes to a point in these locks, whereas with the North Country, it's just kind of dense and blocky, which tends to be more of a down breed characteristic. So anyway, just kind of interesting to see them side by side. The Jacob really doesn't have a luster to it. The North Country has, I'd say, a fair amount of luster to it. So side by side, those two breeds. So all of that is available in the online shop. If you are looking for some new stuff to spin, get to it. Okay, a couple questions from you all. Arwen asked, most of your animals are fiber, but the pigs and Jude bug or make food, the chickens. Thank you. Or as far as the chickens, but the pigs and June bug, not so much. What's their story? Very true. Both the pigs and June came, and I did have this rule when I first started, because I worked with dogs for so long and I love dogs, but they give you love, right? Not necessarily unconditional, but they give you a lot of love and there's a lot of joy that comes from them, but they don't create a product. And I really was like, I'm just going to the farm. I want the animals to produce something in some way. Didn't pan out long term. I've stuck to it for a long time, but word on the street gets out that I will take animals. Not now. I'm full. The farm is full. But so a lot of rescues have come to us, and that's how we ended up with the pigs and with June and sort of with Cuddlebug and even some of our chickens. So June, very quickly, we've had her, I think, coming into 3 years now. We got her from a farm. They were not farming anymore. It was an older couple, and they had had some farm tragedies. It all made sense, except that the animals, they were loved, but they weren't getting the care they needed, basically. So we took June, and we took her best friend at the time, Minnie, probably her best friend for life, Minnie, who was a mini horse. June is a pony, and we also ended up with a goat, Gertie. I still miss Gertie. I miss Minnie, too. Gertie, man. She was an old, fierce little goat, man. Anyway, we rescued them. They had not had their feet done in many, many, many years. And then before that, had not had their feet done in many, many, many years. It was very bad. So June has come a tremendous way. She does have, she has some deformation from not having her feet done for so, Anyway, that's June's story. She's living her best life now. We gauge her to be at least in her mid-20s, probably late 20s. So she is living off the end years here with us. Being a pony, man. And the pigs came to us also, and people just kind of reach out. The pigs came to us. They were living in Portland in kind of a large backyard with some other farm animals, and the couple had broken up. And I'm guessing that the person that was more taking care of the animals is the one who left the situation. So the pigs needed a home pronto, and they came to live with us. They were pets there, so we decided before we got them to keep them as pets, and they're basically our fifth and sixth dog, except better behaved and more contained. As you can hear, one dog in the background. So anyway, that's how some of these animals have ended up with us. And thanks for asking. They all appreciate it. Caitlin asked, when you are looking for a new supplier of fiber, do you usually find them by going to fiber shows, or do you get recommendations from your current suppliers or customers? Do the farmers sometimes find you to do wholesale? So for my wool, nowadays the farmers seem to find me a bit more. Word got out a bit that I bought some wool locally, and that certainly has brought some more people to me. Most of my connections, they just come from knowing people, keeping an eye out, meeting people. My shears are a fantastic way to track down good wool. They have their hands in all of it all over. So, that is where I get a lot of the connections for wool, going to festivals and talking to people, just seeing sheep around me, because I'm lucky enough to have sheep around me, has led me into other connections. So that's basically how. And oddly enough, randomly, sometimes I'll find wool on Craigslist or wherever. But once you kind of get into the wool network, then it sort of, especially with shears, it's a little bit easier to find wool. And occasionally people do come to me, but I'm always a little, I really have to feel comfortable with what I'm getting myself into. So, Sylvia, what animal do you think is more difficult to care for? Here comes a little breeze. Alpaca, sheep, or goats? Which requires the most vet care? Which do I think is the most difficult to care for? I would say the alpaca probably need the most, I would say that they probably need the most of the three. Sheep, I have always thought, after taking care of dogs and taking care of dogs professionally, sheep are, like, to me, pretty basic, right? As long as they have food and water, and then a couple times, you know, you're keeping an eye on them, you make sure that they're getting vaccinated as you desire to vaccinate them, doing their feet, deworming. They're pretty low maintenance animals. I mean, you could have sheep and leave for a week, and as long as they're on pasture, they're going to be fine for the most part, right? Goats can be a little bit more, obviously goats are more prone to escaping. Weathered goats, a lot of them have a little bit more chance of getting some other issues. So I would say the alpaca of all three are probably the hardest. I'd say the sheep are easiest. of all of our farm animals, June is the most expensive. I'll tell you that. As far as feeding her, as far as getting her feet done, all that stuff. Now, I do a lot of the care for, I can do injections and things like that. So that has to play into it. But none of them are, of those three, I don't think any of them are overly intense. But the alpaca can be a little more sensitive to some stuff, as can the goats. Sheep are pretty, especially depending on the breed you get, they're pretty hardy little creatures. I think that's it for the questions, y'all. Okay, I'm trying to think. I think that's all I have for the moment. So why don't we cut to letting Stephanie talk for a few minutes. I have a couple videos, I think, from inside the mill. And then I'll come back and say goodbye for this week. See you in a minute. So, just introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Wilkes, and I'm a sheep shearer, and I'm helping out my friend Sarah Gilbert at the Mendocino Wool and Fiber booth at Black Sheep Gathering 2023. We're so happy to be back.
And you wrote a book.
I did write a book 5 years ago now, almost. Can't believe it. It's called Raw Material, Working Wool in the West.
And so, how did you get into it? You kind of have an interesting story, because changed your life drastically to become a shearer.
I did change my life drastically. I have to say, catching up, I have been shearing for 10 years now.
Oh, so, my gosh.
I know. I have been. It's been 10 years.
You're not a new shearer.
I'm not a new shearer anymore, but I was when I 10 years ago. So.
And what did you do before you were a shearer?
I spent 20 years working in software engineering. My grandfather was a programmer for the Defense Department. He taught me to write code when I was 4.
Oh. That's really cool. So now you're shearer, so why did you take the plunge? And people can read the book.
They can read the book and hear probably more than they ever want to know about
it. It's quite entertaining.
I'd heard in late 2012 that folks with small flocks were having trouble finding sheep shearers. The typical model is that sheep shearers don't get paid very much per head. So we're talking, you know, $3 to $6 a head on a crew if you're lucky. And so in that model, they want to shear as many sheep as they can in a day to make a decent wage. And they don't want to come out for 4 sheep or 5 sheep or 10 sheep and you drove maybe 2 hours each way. So I just kind of changed my model. I have a $150 minimum fee, and that covers basically most small flocks of like 5 to 10 within a 45-minute or so drive of my house with some hoof trimming and maybe some additional care. But I started out just really going out for those 2, 3, 4 sheep that nobody else wanted to come out for. And I actually did it part-time for 2 full years. So this is the thing. Everybody's like, oh, you quit your job and then you went and did this. Like, no, I had a full-time day job for a very hard one. And then I would shear all weekend. And I would take vacation days from my day job, and I would go shearing to learn from people like Sarah's husband or my friend Jordan. And then after 2 years of that, it was getting a little crazy, and I actually was getting enough word of mouth that I thought I might be able to make it a real, at least seasonal business. And so I did. So I quit my day job in May, June of 2015 after 2 years of shearing on the side. And then I just do that, but I do supplement with freelance writing. So, because it is seasonal, it's a spring thing, so.
Right, and it's very interesting in your book just to hear about the journey and how, I mean, it's very hard work. And to hear about the journey
of
learning that hard work was really interesting. It was great.
Thank you so much.
What's your favorite part of being a shearer?
Oh, it's all the landscapes I get to see and beyond. And also all the dogs I get to work with, no lie, like the guard dogs and the herding dogs are like 12 to 15 people per dog in their helpfulness and their skill. And just seeing, it makes me really hopeful because I get to work with people who are, you know, bringing back native species and doing tons of things to help the environment, put carbon back in the soil where it belongs. And so I actually feel very hopeful. You know, where there's all like doom and gloom, but I am out there all the time seeing people doing amazing work. And so it's really kind of changed my attitude, made me very hopeful.
Good. So what are you, do you still take new, well, I should ask, what area are you sharing in? And are you taking new clients on still?
It's June, so no.
I'm kidding.
I'm joking. When it gets hot is when we start to joke. Everybody's like, take me now. I take some new clients.
Okay.
I'm working from basically roughly Santa Cruz to about Humboldt County, from the ocean to about Central California, kind of down the middle 101 right now.
The most beautiful part of California.
The most beautiful part of California.
If you're from SoCal, yeah. I'm sorry, I just...
No, I mean, the West, actually, it's the American West. I've actually shared in most of the Western states now, and, like, it's so stunning. You see very few, you know, I mean, everything's beautiful. Montana, the Dakotas, Nevada, I love it all. I love it all.
So how can people, so people can grab your book, where can they find your book?
They can find my book on most online retailers, their local libraries have it, and I actually love when people request it from your library, because they tend to order multiple copies.
Nice.
So request it from your library, we love that, we love supporting our libraries. And my website is Stephanie Wilkes, spelled with a Y, all1word.com. There's a sharing request form there, and I'm Lady Sheep Shearer on Instagram, but do not see direct messages during shearing season, so gotta hit the request form.
All right, awesome. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes.
Thanks, it's great to see you here.
All right, you all, I think that's it for this time. I hope you enjoyed those videos, enjoyed the interview with Stephanie. She has such an interesting story. The book is really good. So if you are interested, not just because you're in the wool industry, but if you just want to hear her life story of how she kind of transitioned her career so big is really interesting. Plus hearing about another wool mill startup, all the things. It's just a really interesting read. So grab the book. And thank you so much for listening, watching, whatever it is you're doing. I'm hoping to see some of you in the mill shop this Saturday, or maybe in Patreon for the chain plying workshop, or in Patreon just in general. I appreciate all of you that are in there, and I appreciate all of you for taking the time to watch and listen. So please, if you could, like, subscribe, comment. I love the comments and the questions. So that's it. Until next time. Be kind to your neighbors. Be kind. Make so many pretty things. Stay healthy and take care. And I will see you soon. Thank you.